Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
You talk about Santa Claus, you want to know what it's all about. Santa Claus got drunk last night. Everybody tried to throw him out. But I want to tell you, folks, I'd all again. Santa stopped at a neighbor's house and started drinking good tea. Now, while I was with him, I named a few. I'd love to name some of them whiskeys that Santa was drinking to you. It was way back in the 1880s, down in Mid Spring Valley, where the crab tree grow. The old granddaddy bought a rocking chair for Mr. Boston. One day we're rocking in the mellow breeze. The rocking chair broke and threw him by the muffler. He jumped up thinking about his old drum. He saddled his white horse, said he's going over to Johnny Walker.
Clyde Lazlin.
The Three Rivers.
Santa Came Home Drunk. One of my absolute favorites. Clyde Lazlin and the Cadillac Baby Specials. And in fact, I got to Will Rogers Airport last night, and it's getting to be late. They much like Phoenix, they've got a rental car center here at Oklahoma City. And so, you get on the bus, and it was pretty quiet. And there were, I get to the President's Circle, the Hertz President's Circle, where you just get in the car and you drive away. And there it was, a Cadillac CT4. And I, well, that's me. And I jumped in the caddy, 14,000 miles, and I was quite happy. Clyde Lazlin and the Cadillac Baby Specials and the Dale Day.
I love that intro song. That was great. I've never heard that before.
That's our Christmas. We've got
more up on going to Johnny Walker a lot. I can tell that.
Well, that it's one of those class of songs.
Yeah.
And there seems like in the 50s and 60s, there were so many of these where the lyrics plug in, drinking songs. Mm-hmm. George Thorogood is
the
one, right?
Sure.
I Drink Alone. It's very similar.
What was this other one? Scotch, whiskey, beer.
Yes.
I can't say the title, but Scotch, more whiskey, beer. Anyway, yeah.
But this, it's one of those songs that, the lyrics all tie together, mm-hmm. brands of alcohol. And it's such a fun song. And we've got, I think, the best collection of offbeat Christmas music going. I mean, you've heard.
I like it.
You've heard Christmas in Jail.
I don't know if I have heard
You've
that
never
one.
Never heard Christmas
I don't
in
think
Jail.
So. I'll have to look these things up and play them on my
Well, you can go to Spotify. There's the ATR, at the races, the ATR Christmas list.
I'll pull that off.
I'll send you the link.
And my wife will like this. I'll torture her at home. The kids will be tortured. We'll love it. But
you will absolutely love it.
Okay.
I guarantee. I love coming here. And you guys have two more cards. And
mm-hmm.
Then you can concentrate on qualifying for NHC.
Yeah, I need to do a lot of concentrating on that. I've had a lot of feeders, I've been in a lot of tournaments, and then they just flush out. I don't know how that happens. It just goes to prove my longtime theory. No matter how much you think you know or how much you actually know, it's still at least half luck. You got to have a lot of it somehow.
They got to run.
Run, and they have to not find trouble, and they have to not have someone else put them in trouble. It's just, there's so many layers and factors to it. That's why getting there is so cool, and I've been able to do it twice now to the NHC, and I'm hoping to do it many more times, obviously. But and the folks that can do this each and every year, like Sally Goodall's in it like 20 something odd years now. I mean, Hall of Famer. That's just unreal how they can do it year after year after year. And someday when I'm not working, I don't know when that's going to be. That'll be my primary focus, that and traveling around the country. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, and we should. I'm gonna slip in a plug for the Beat Pick contest.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is how you first waded into the contest world.
Yeah. No, it was about whenever it started. First year was 5-6 years ago now, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm like, okay, this is free. I'll try to see what this is all about. I'm like, okay, that was cool. I didn't qualify, but it was fun. But it got me a tour membership at a discounted rate. I'm like, okay, so you got to have that. So I just started peeling back the onion a little bit to find out the information. Yep. I was like, all right, well, just keep on going. And then lo and behold, in 22, I qualified on one of the the horse players' website for the NHC on one of their free games. They do four or five of those a year.
Yep.
And at the time, you had to finish top five, and I squeaked in there at five, about a dime or 20 cents ahead of the poor person in sixth, and I was there. And then, you know, magically, I made the semifinals and then the final table, which was unreal, too, first tryout. Of course, the worst thing you could possibly do, because anything is going to happen every time, right? It's kind of like golf. You hit that long 300-yard drive, and you're like, oh, and then you can't do anything the rest of the day. But that one drive keeps you coming back.
Well, that was I was there. You know, we obviously were there broadcasting, and it was so exciting to have you make the final table that year. And to me, it's really instructive. We got our friend Jim Sebas. Jim is a guy that also does not spend big money to qualify almost every year. I think he's qualified 10, 12 times, maybe more. And he plays the feeders, you know, the $8 feeders, the $17 feeders. And if he doesn't get in that week, okay. But when he then, you know, and year after year, for low cost, he gets there.
Well, that's my goal, too. I mean, I could draw $500 every week and then be living on the street because my wife probably wouldn't like that. So we'll see how that goes for some of those. But, you know, there's levels for everybody. It's really cool to try to make it, so I encourage everybody to give it a try. Springboard tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central start time. We do have a card tonight at 6:30 for Remington, and then that's it. So we're done. Our 67 days, weather permitting, we had no super issues this year where we had to cancel cards due to obliterating thunderstorms, which we're liable to have at any time in Oklahoma, or late in the season for this meet at least. Sometimes we do get winter weather, and that's racked us out a couple of times. But so far this year, everything's been great weather-wise, and we'll make the season on time as scheduled. So that's something we don't always get to do here, but we'll take it for sure.
Well, you look at this field, and we'll start with the springboard, then we'll hit on couple of the other stakes. You do all the notes, the publicity notes, and you do a phenomenal job.
Well, Richard Linehan writes the bulk of those. I just edit and put them out.
But, right,
yeah,
well,
he does a great job.
And Richard does a great job then, and you write a few recaps and such. But I was watching how the field was going to come together, and I don't know. I was expecting a competitive field and maybe 10. You end up with a full gate of 12. And it's a very interesting group. Starting with Moquette, who I talked to yesterday, he's got this volatile colt that won first out at Churchill going six. And, of course, it's the springboard mile. So there's any number of horses that are going to be going a mile for a first time.
Mm-hmm.
This is a second-time starter. Comes in as the fastest horse and the 7-2 favorite. He's going to have to stretch out. And Rafi Bejarano picks up the mount. Morales, had ridden him in the debut. Obviously, the first point of conversation. But there's another easily five horses, Dale, that I got the figures from Thoroughgraph to look at last night, and there's easily five horses that are well within hailing distance, including some prices. The horse of Lonnie Briley's coming in from Delta and from Oaklawn. Cole Battle, the Cole Front Colt, coming off the Jean Lafitte win. The horse of Danny Pish's with another step forward. Brooklyn Alley Cat is interesting.
Right. And that's his other horse. There's the one that's undefeated, Jolly Samurai. He's won both of our previous open stakes races at sprint distances of 6 and 7. Everybody's looking at that one. But Brooklyn Alley Cat ran a monster race last time in Allowance Company at a mile. Won over the turf at round two turns at 7.5 prior to that. So Brooklyn Alley Cat might be something. I actually like that horse a lot. You mentioned Moquette Speed King. This horse obviously is talented. He's had great workouts at a couple of different places, and he's at Oakland now before he came over here. I think he shipped over yesterday, maybe. I think it was yesterday morning he came over. So, and Ron Moquette is one of those guys. He usually has a few horses here for the season, not many, just literally a handful. And, people don't realize he started out, a lot of his career started out in Oklahoma. He was from Eastern Oklahoma, I believe, originally, and he started Blue Ribbon Downs in Salisbury, now defunct, and raced here back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, I think it was. He had a full string here, and then he's just continued to grow and grow and grow. So he will have horses at Oakland when they open their stable area a month or so, or 6 weeks before they start racing. And he's one of the few that does this. He'll ship them over here. It's about a 5 to 6 hour drive. It's not the easiest drive on earth because you got to get out of the mountain zone first. Once you get to I-40, you're okay. But getting out of the mountains is the one thing. But he'll ship them over here, and people will go, I wonder why he's doing that. Well, I haven't asked him, but my guess is sometimes you have a horse that's ready to go, and you can't wait another month to let him run. You need to just go ahead and do it. And he sends him over here, and he does very well with that. And Speed King had a great race at Churchill, has carried his talent to Oaklands, training great over there. And he's going to be obviously tough and one of the ones on the front end. I think Dr. Ruben M. coming in from California is probably going to have something to say on the front possibly as well. And it's a kind of a wide-open race. We drew 12. First time we've had 12 in this race since 2017. And strange things have happened in the Springboard Mile. You go all the way back to Will Take Charge, who was the champion three-year-old in 2013, I believe it was. In 2012, he gets beat here in an upset by Texas Bling, the longest shot that's ever won this race. Absolute stunner. No one saw it coming. Nobody saw that coming. Everybody loved Will Take Charge. And he turns out to be a really good horse the next year. But he got stunned here that night and just got caught in the final strides by some freak closer who I think won one other race in his career. So bizarre things can happen in this race because there's a lot of unknowns. Some are going around two turns for the first time. Some are going a mile for the first time. And many of these are under the lights for the first time as well. That's another thing to take into account. So the ones that have been here in schooling in the paddock at night probably have a little bit of edge there. At least they're used to that. So a really great race. Hopefully everybody takes a look at it. I do like Brook and Alley Cat to have a chance. Another horse, the horse I ended up picking on top is the local. So we'll give the local a chance, trying to have the first Oklahoma bred winner since 2011. Ted's Folly was that horse way back then. Mr. Omaha. Yes, he's Okie bred, but this horse has already won at a mile. He's had horrible trips in his last couple wins, especially his last win. He was annihilated out of the gate. He stumbled on his own in the Don McNeil's, a short field, and then he gets whacked by the horse next to him who pushes him clear to the outside at a mile. Luis Quinones, veteran rider, had it been one of the younger guys who has plenty of talent we've seen come through in the last couple of years at Ramage Park, may not have had the same result. Louis Q didn't panic. He said, we've got a mile. Let's just go ahead and get our legs under us. Let this horse get, you know, gathered, basically, and figured out, settled in. And then at about the half-mile mark, starts moving along. And by mid-turn, he's on full run, and he has a lead early in the stretch, about 3/16 out. So Mr. Omaha's overcome a bunch. I think he's got the talent. He's already handled the distance. And he's working well as well for leading over Brian Hawk, going to win his first owner title here at Remington Park. I like Mr. Omaha. Dominant Spirit had the lead in the Clever Trevor until the last strides. I think he's going to be in the mix. Brooklyn Alley Cat, we've mentioned. The Invader, Speed King, and Dr. Ruben M, people are going to love. But another one, I always try to find a horse that had to find a reason for them somehow or another. Keno, the Steve Asmussen barn, not the one that's being highly touted of the three. By the way, Steve, 2 weeks ago when I asked him, what do you think you're going to put in the Springboard? He goes, I'm not sure I'm going to put anything in. And then he puts in three.
Right.
So he was really up in the air of what he had for this race or what he wanted to do with it, and he went ahead and filled it up. Keno on the outside, that's not the best post at a mile because we don't have that long of a run to the first turn, but this one last time out, under Stuart Elliott, ran into traffic coming. He was on a move. It was just rolling along, and then there was a wall of about four or five in front of him, and he just had to stop. He didn't check and pull up or take up or anything like that, but he just had to wait. And that waiting, I think, really cost him that last race in the same event with Brook and Alley Cat. So clean trip. Jermaine Bridgeman gets the call here because Elliott's moved on to Complex Music in this one for Steve Asmussen also. But I think Keno might be a horse to watch due to the race last time out. And at odds, right now, 12-1 morning line may go higher than that. We'll see.
You know, you mentioned the three Asmussens, and in addition to Keno, and there's Complex Music for his longtime client, Mike McCarty, coming off of an allowance win at Indiana and stretching out from six, a horse that has started six times. And when we talk to Jeff Franklin later and do this race as part of the Win Using Thoroughgraph segment, this is a horse that in Thoroughgraph parlance it has done a lot of developing already. I mean, technically, the race that he ran, a 74 buyer, a 9 on Thoroughgraph, you know, should be competitive here, but he's already he's run a lot and he's developed a lot already, so you don't necessarily expect, you know, another step forward, which might be necessary to win. He's starting a horse here that's 15-1 with Cabrera, a gun runner, a $230,000 October Yearling last year. Blue Angel, that got a 34 buyer, breaking the maiden mid-November, before Thanksgiving. And you know, this horse is going to be glossed over. And every expectation, I mean, the horse won as a 6-5 favorite in that debut, but, I mean, is going to look, you know, mighty soft against this bunch. Why is Steve running this horse if he doesn't think that there's, you know, something to work with here?
Yeah, he doesn't waste his horses. He doesn't throw them in just to, well, we'll take a shot. I mean, if he does, he doesn't ever talk like that because he's always got a plan. If you ask him about any horse of his couple hundred he has all over the country, he'll tell you all about each one of them. Cabrera gets the mount. Elliott's on Complex Music. Interesting. Both Keith and Eric were here last night, and I think they're both here tonight. They're not here on Friday. They're back over at Oaklawn. So the local guys, Stuart Elliott's his man here on the grounds at Remington Park, but two others, Jermaine Bridgemont and Cabrera, get the other two. But Cabrera, he's been the leading rider here four different times. He's had a great year finally this year. He's been healthy. He's not had injury situations, and he's finally fully back, and he's definitely capable of finding the most out of this possible horse.
Well, and what's you mentioned Stu Elliott, and I should mention we rode his son the other day.
Chris yeah.
rode for us. We're in today, actually, in the nightcap at Aqueduct with Scherzando. The fact that Stewie ends up on Complex Music is interesting. 8-1. He rode Blue Angel to the maiden breaker, and Cabrera gets Blue Angel. And he rode Kino the last three times, and Jermaine ends up on him. So, I mean, if you're playing musical jockeys, you appreciate that Stewie ends up on, you know, what the Asmussen barn would think is their best chance.
Well, he moves to one he hasn't been on, too. That's the interesting part.
Yes.
He's been on the other two, and he goes to one he hasn't ridden. So and this horse has been training over at Oaklawn, came over here a week or so ago and had an out over the track here, got a 3-furlong work, which, you know, whatever, just, you know, getting used to the track. Has been dominant up in Indiana, doing very well against Indiana breds, or in the Indiana races up there. You know, Stuart Elliott sees something. Somebody sees something in this horse that he chose this one. So well, if you want to play follow the jockey, there you go.
Exactly.
And this will be Stuart's second consecutive leading jockey title here at Remington Park.
For him. He's had his move first to California and then circulating to the Southwest and ended up being a tremendous enhancement to his career and then latching on with the Asmussen barn.
Well, and he'd done all the other big things. So, and he, you know, you can continue to chase and you talk to him. It's very interesting. He's like, you know, I'm at an age now, I don't need to keep chasing the super dream. I just need to make a solid living and provide and do what I have to do. And sometimes it's more fun that way, in a way. You know, he's done all the things, all the aspirations everybody has when they're 20. So there's something to look at there. And he's just a veteran guy, great jockey, super nice person. And he's done very well since he moved down here about 5 years ago to ride all the Remington season, dabble here and there at Oaklawn. Usually he's down Sam Houston and a Lone Star, and the family pretty much has not relocated here permanently. They still have a permanent home in Kentucky, but yeah, it's interesting that angle, but it's worked out very well for him.
Just looking at time form, I wanted to see what the pace projector had to say about this. It calls for a fast pace with Speed King on the stretch out from the six for Moquette, and with Raffi. Likes Dominant Spirit and Dr. Ruben M. and the 10 Medicine Dog basically stalking, and it is coded red for pace.
Well, that would set it up for Mr. Omaha if he has that kid.
That's very true.
Medicine Dog has blinkers too. This one was claimed. Sarah Davison claimed this one. Alpha Win went right into the Clever Trevor, and fared okay there, finished in third in that one, and then just an absolute bomb shortening back up to go 5.5 last time out, which didn't turn out to be a good idea. But they've added the blinkers, and since then, Mrs. Ogg's been training very well, so she's going to give this one a long shot in there since you mentioned him.
20-1 with Floyd Wethy, and Harry Hernandez had ridden the first three starts on Medicine Dog.
Yeah, Harry was going to be second, but he is over at Oakland now, and he had to take off for a few days because
his
new baby on the way, so he made it out to Arizona, I believe, for that. So, yeah, he gave the second place spot up by not finishing the meet, but, you know, Harry's great jockey, super nice guy.
I've always, you know, we had him in New York off and on, and he spent time at Finger Lakes, he spent time at Naira. I've always thought he was going to carve out a nice journeyman career, and he really has. Mm-hmm. He's very competent.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to do very well at Oakland. Cody Autry's his agent, who brought Christian Torres through here a couple of years ago, and that's worked out well for all of them, too.
The great Cody Autry. We love him. The John Clocker John Nichols is listening and smiling, one of his pals. The Springboard Mile points for the Derby, and we'll talk tomorrow with Matt Vance. The big focus is to get this race graded, get a grade three here.
And I don't know, Senior Buscador won this race in 2020. Obviously, he's gone on to be this great, huge earner by virtue of his winning the Dubai World Cup earlier this year. I don't know if his effort in that race 2020 still holds in our grading committee or not. There's a span of, it's either 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
So we're right on the edge, and he may have fallen off, unfortunately. But we're hopeful. We're still hopeful. And, again, I don't know what else it's going to take because there's a horse that came through here. His three-year-old aspirations were crushed due to an injury, but they stayed with him. He turned out to be a really nice older horse and stumbled, about fell out of the gate of the Cigar Mile. So throw that one out. They're going to hopefully have one more start, talking to Joey Peacock, in the Pegasus down at Gulfstream is their goal, and then he's off to a stallion career.
But
one of my all-time favorite races here at Remington Park, the Springboard. He broke his maiden about a month before the Springboard at 5.5 furlongs, late starting two-year-old. Did the same thing in the 5.5 maiden race as he did in the Springboard. Horrible start, came from out of the clouds, and everybody's like, wow. And Peacock told us the story again a couple weeks back. He goes, the phone was blowing up for days because everybody wanted to buy this horse. And it turns out he gets hurt, and so nobody wanted to buy him, obviously. But they stuck with him, and he turned out to be a cash cow in more ways than one.
Yeah.
And he's just one of those fun horses. He's going to disappoint you more often than not because of the way his running style. But once it works, if it works, it works big.
Well, and Fincher does just such a great job overall. And by the way, speaking of grading and of long shadows of a race. The Oklahoma Derby figures prominently last 2 weeks ago in the Clark.
Oh, yeah.
As Oklahoma Derby winners run 1-2.
Mm-hmm. Rattle and Roll from 2 years ago, most wanted from this year,
yep.
And the horse that was third was in our race last year. I can't think of it. Just came up blank. So basically, yeah, the Oklahoma Derby was all over the Clark, and that was fun. That was a good stretch run too. Great battle down the stretch.
Well, and it's good for the Derby, for the Oklahoma Derby to that'll score. That will score.
Yeah, that one's definitely still on the radar for sure.
Well, the card tomorrow, as mentioned, we start at 5:00 Central, 6:00 Eastern, and the stakes action. And there's not, obviously, it's not just the stakes action. There's multiple opportunities for multi-race wagers, including early, middle, and late pick fours, mm-hmm. pick five, obviously. An absolute chock full of betting opportunities, and that middle pick four starts with a good 5.5 furlong first level allowance, field at 12. Then the stakes action kicks off in the seventh with the You See It. Let's run through the stakes sequence.
Yeah, the first two are Oklahoma bred races, so the You See It, if anybody wants to see a horse that should be a single, it should happen for sure in this race. Miss Code West, the Oklahoma bred, who won the Trapeze last year in Open Company, now renamed to Toby Keith, and we're going to be very fortunate to have Toby's family here tomorrow night to present the trophy. His daughter's going to sing the national anthem, Crystal, so a lot going on with that, and we wanted to pay tribute to Toby. Longtime supporter of horse racing around the country, but especially here in Oklahoma. His suite is three down from this suite we're sitting in right now. And I always tell the story. I could always know when he was here because my announce booth is right just to our south here. We're in suite four, and it's somewhere around suite five and six. But Toby, when he was out on the balcony, I knew he was here because I could just hear him talking, not yelling or screaming at anybody or cheering anybody on. I could just hear his talking voice, which was big enough, and I knew he was here. So he's heavily missed, but he was a great supporter of Remington Park, great supporter of Oklahoma Racing. breeding all over the place, and he still has quite a few horses running under his Dreamwalking Farms name. His sister helping to manage that.
I see
now
that.
For the
I saw her name on the overnight.
So they're going to be here tomorrow. We're very happy with that. But you see it first in race 7, Oklahoma bred 3-year-old fillies, Miss Code West. If she might be able to stumble and touch her nose to the dirt and still get up and win this race. Devious Diva is going to get a little play probably and probably be chasing. Let His Legacy to CR Trout. This is one I think Sierra's been very high on, and she does well in the sprints, not so much around two turns. She's only tried it twice, and to no avail. Last year in the slideshows, the two-year-old, and then a couple of races back in the Oklahoma Distaff on Classics night. She did run second there, but she was second to Miss Code West, who won as she pleased. So I think that's probably going to be the same scenario once again. Miss Code West, the 8 over the 7, Let His Legacy, and the You See It for Oklahoma bred 3-year-old fillies at 1 mile.
The Jim Thorpe follows the mile for the State Bred Boys.
And we have a special guest, by the way, presenting the trophy for this race. Do you know that? It's you, Steve Bick, will present the trophy for the Jim Thorpe tomorrow night.
That's an honor just to have my name. I'll look forward to that picture. To have my name on the presentation line of the Jim Thorpe.
And it will be, we're glad to have you there. And
thank
we're
you.
Happy to have you hand the trophy off. Happy to have you here every year for this weekend, too. Three-year-old Colton Kellys for the Jim Thorpe Oklahoma Breds at 1 mile. This one, a little bit more wide open.
Yeah.
There's no Miss Code West. Flat Hanby, who was strong early in the year, he's kind of flattened out. We'll see, no pun intended there, but we'll see what he does. He did have a good workout for Joby Caster last week. Mindbolt coming off the turf. We'll see what he does over the main track. That one out of the Calhoun barn. Brett Calhoun had another solid year here. Oaky Smoke is the one I went with at 6-1. Decent work recently, last week, half mile, solid speed numbers. Hasn't really shown up yet, but I just have a feeling this one, Juan Padilla, is going to spring an upset of some sort here. Alfredo Triano, by the way, had another very nice season as a jockey here at Raymond Park, sitting on 499 career wins. So one more, he gets 500.
Well, the Jim Thorpe, and the Jim Thorpe starts the late pick 5, races 8 through 12. The 9th, the Toby Keith, the former trapeze, and 7-horse field with a seemingly solid, to say the least, favorite in Mike Rutherford and Steve Asmussen's Honor AP filly, Glee, who will be making her 6th career start.
Now, it was like she was the only horse in the race here on Oklahoma Derby undercard in the Gaylord Memorial at 6.5 furlongs. She won by 15 lengths. But then she went up to Keeneland, tried a stakes event up there, didn't fare nearly as well. Obviously, competition a little bit tougher. Back in this one, Tapjer's Actor, who was second to her, I think is going to be possibly in the mix. We'll see if Glee remembers what she did here back in September and does it once again. But she'll be awfully tough. Those two, I think, are the ones.
The She's All In, C.R. Trout, right? She's All In?
She's All In was Dr. Robert Zellner out of Tulsa.
Okay.
And She's All In, an 11-time winner here at Remington Park. But she also won graded races in open company in her career.
Yes.
So she was a very solid mare and earned over $1 million in her career. This one at 1.70 mile, open company race, flashy last. Steve Asmussen is going to be my pick in this one, 3-1 on the morning line. How many do we have? 8. Who else did I like in this race?
2-1, Corningstone.
Yeah, Corningstone, McPeak. He sent this one in for a reason. So those are probably my two.
She is cross-entered at Oklahoma, too, for Saturday.
So okay,
we'll check with Kenny,
there.
Yeah, and see what his plans were. Kenny didn't, when I talked to him 2 weeks ago after the Clark, he didn't think he was going to make it to Arizona, but then he did. So you never know with Kenny. He picks his spots real well with that kind of scenario.
Our Davina in this race, I think, might be your possible exotic horse to watch out for. 21 the morning line. Winner last time out over the turf, and Belen Quinones had that ride. The younger brother, Luis, he'll be up once again. The Family Stone Racing outfit out of Edmond will be here in force on Friday night for that race especially.
Well, that gets us to the Hawk, the Jeffrey Hawk
Memorial.
Memorial.
Won last year by U.S. Army. George Sharp, the cowboy Sean Davis, trains, definitely figures in here, has been sprinting this season at Remington Park. 3 6 furlong events, a winner, third in the Dave Advance Sprint on the undercard of the Oklahoma Derby, then third in Allowance Company in mid-November with General Shipman winning a race, just finishing ahead of him last time out in that Allowance race. General Shipman went on to win his next start. So we'll see if that was a bit of a key. He's going to factor. Who else? A Victory for Vets out of the Brett Calhoun barn is going to be a long shot choice here, and I kind of like that horse a lot. Seven furlongs. Those two, U.S. Army and Victory for Vets. Silver Prospector, the Millionaire out of the Asmussen barn, could definitely be a player. Palexi, have been waiting for him to run his race all season long. He's done it only one time at seven furlongs. Don't expect him to run his, hopefully he runs his best race, but he's been somewhat disappointing after showing a lot of skill here last year when the Governor's Cup and other races. So,
yeah, it's so funny to look at Silver Prospector, who has maintained his form for 5 years.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This year, he's made 9 starts. He's made over $250,000. 3 wins, 2 seconds in the third.
As a 7-year-old, yeah.
And he's a horse. He's not a gelding.
Which is interesting. So,
and he's also a declaration of war who races, you know, not exclusively on the dirt, but predominantly, and then some. I don't know the last time he's been on the grass.
Yeah, he's and he handles distance of a mile and up, no troubles. He's won 2 mile races here this season. Second last time out without a trace, beat him on October 19th. Off since then, so we'll see how he bounces back, but. Yeah, $1.6 million at the total bank for Silver Prospector, who was in the graded ranks for quite a while, and then is now here at Remington Park, and he's still racking up wins. And, you know, hats off to the team that owns him for keeping him going and enjoying him, you know, enjoying the wins and enjoying racing. And hopefully a stallion career down the road for him.
Maybe somewhere. I mean, you know, son of Warfront and the Oars, and, yeah, I can't remember the last time I brought his name up with Steve. So, you're second in the Oakland Mile in March.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's not as if he
won a nice allowance race over there prior to that in February. So, we'll see. It's a good race. That's a race 11 to kick off the late double, the Jeffrey Hawk Memorial leading to the Springboard. So, 12 races tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central start time. The last 6 are stakes, 3 pick 4s, 2 pick 5s. Should be a good card. Full fields for the most part. We had 2 7s, I think, other than that. Everything else is 8 or up.
It's a super card to wrap up the meet, and it's always great to have one of the best stakes of the year at a racetrack be the last race of the meet. I love that concept.
Yeah, it's worked out well for us, and if we can, we try to stack the races, all the stakes at the end, so people seem to like it. But, you know, the front of the card's got the full fields. You have 1, 2, 3 maidens in the first 4 races. So, you know, maybe cash something big there and roll it up in the stakes races later on.
The Dale Day, everybody, the voice of the action at Remington Park. Dale, great to be here. Thank you. 11:26 Eastern Time post for the nightcap, for the feature, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me here today, and thanks for coming back. We always appreciate you coming in and working us in as in your cross-continent travels trying to get home for the holiday season.
I love coming here, and it's become the official, caboose on the year-long travel circuitry that we've come very much used to doing. So happy to be back in OKC, and I'll do all my usual things. I do want to go to the Cowboy Museum, which I've not been to.
Okay, yeah, that's very good. You'll really appreciate that.
Well, and I go down to the bomb site, which is just the most moving and affecting.
Have you been through that museum?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
It's astounding.
You won't believe this. My family and I did the museum for the first time this summer. And I was here, obviously, when that happened. And maybe that's one of the reasons I just wasn't wanting to go
so
through
raw.
It. But we went through it, and it's, yeah, it, I kind of relive everything. You remember, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Just an unbelievable situation. But the way that was set up, that National Memorial down there, is absolutely beautiful.
It's astounding. And you literally... I've been to a lot of memorials and you know, various. I frankly have not been to Holocaust sites and to any of the camps, but that introduction that you experience through the audio of a meeting
that's right
across
yeah.
the street
mm-hmm.
will absolutely it will leave you shaken. It is unbelievable the way the way they lead you through the day and through the subsequent days. It's one of the most remarkable museum experiences anyone will have.
Yeah, it's very that part's so interactive, and you don't do anything but just listen. And they lead you through the day like that day was. It was a normal day
yeah.
until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it's yeah, it you can't go through that. And not, if you can do that and go through that and not have any feeling about it, you are the most emotionless person in the universe. That's all there is to it.
Well, and the monument itself, the,
no,
the 903
yeah.
with the 902, the reflecting pool, you have to come at night too
mm-hmm.
because the individual chairs that represent everyone that was killed,
mm-hmm.
They're lit up, and I've only been here for Christmas time, so the wreaths that are the Christmas wreaths that are on each of the chairs. And of course, the ones at the children's from the daycare mm-hmm. center.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's very well done.
Yeah,
I'm glad you've seen that, and yeah, you'll enjoy the cowboy as well. It's a partner here in our Adventure District, Oklahoma City Adventure District, all the different attractions around this area at the northeast corner of the city, at I-44 and I-35, and you'll love the Cowboy Museum. It's very good, very good.
It's a fabulous place. I for many years Tulsa was as far as I would get when I lived in Kansas City and worked for Procter & Gamble, and I'd have to come down for Cisco. And so Tulsa was really the southeastern or the southwestern corner of my territory.
Right.
And so I never really got to Oklahoma City. And so it's only I came, as I've said, for the classics.
Mm-hmm. A few years back, yeah.
Way back when I started with the show and presented the D. Fine Oki,
right.
And Donnie Kay, and then hadn't been back. So I've had these chances really to come and enjoy the town. And then when Tina and I came through on Route 66, we had the most amazing. I discovered the Lake of the Cherokees,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't know existed. Amazing.
That's
fabulous.
A great trip. I hope to take that trip someday, too.
We're going to try. Now we have to go to Arizona and go west. We've gone Arizona east.
Okay.
You're supposed to go from Chicago to Santa Monica.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But, it's like anything else. You
got some time restraints somewhere, especially when you're driving.
For sure.
You stop to see everything. Suddenly your week to 2 weeks is up. Quick.
Well, speaking of time restraints, let me get Dave Hill in here and get some NFL action. The Dale Day, everybody, who just does a fabulous job here. Now, thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow morning and tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
And tonight, hopefully, too.
And we'll be joined tomorrow by Matt Vance. We'll talk some business issues. I had a very interesting conversation with somebody yesterday about the handle and a concept for you guys.
Okay.
Which we'll do, maybe the three of us.
I'll have to check on that with you.
Yeah. Okay. We'll follow up with that.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, everybody.
Dale Day, folks, and I guess the regional portion of our conversations, we've got the Arkansan stepping in, commonly referred to as the Sioux Seer. Dave, you bet. Somebody was talking Calipari with me yesterday too in Arizona.
How about them hogs?
Well, let's check back in March. We'll see how you feel then.
Okay.
I
relish the underdog role. I think it'll be just fine in March.
Well, you might have wanted to take a couple of underdogs because the only you went 4-2 last week, including the miracle finish on Monday night, but there were two dogs that you could have used, Carolina and Green Bay.
Yeah, definitely. It was a weird week. you know, I felt like Philadelphia was the one where we just, the Philadelphia event was the one where we just didn't stand a chance there of covering that number. But Detroit was a bit of a, not covering with Detroit was a little bit frustrating, to say the least, laying the 3.5. But that happens. I mean, because, you know, we covered the Jets. And so you got to trade those, you can't be a genius when you cover by the hook and feel like you got unlucky when you lose by the hook, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
The Jets game, and, you know, we got a better part of that number. That number ended up closing 6, some places 5.5. So, if you back the Jets late, you lost. So being early to the number there was important, and I was glad to get that one in. And then Cincinnati, yeah, man, talk about lucky. Oh, my God. I mean, that was and I'll tell you why it was doubly lucky, because, the Cowboys, choked and blew it on the blocked punt by touching the ball. But even then, the Cowboys should have covered, because I think that Cincinnati should not have run the touchdown in. You know, they should have. I remember who it was that ran it in. Was it Chase or?
Yeah, it was Jamar.
Yeah, so he should have gone down. He should have gone down on the 1 yard line, because they can run the clock out. I just don't know why you run it in there and let the Cowboys have the ball back with any shot at all, you know, giving them any chance at all. This is where the Chiefs, would have downed that ball on the 1 yard line. I'm glad that they did. I'm glad that we covered because of him running it in and getting the touchdown, but I think it was bad strategy and bad tactics.
That's it occurred to me like a couple days later, actually. I think on Tuesday that I was listening to some, some point spread conversations and beat, bad beat conversations, and that point was made. You're right.
In my NFL, group text, everybody was saying, "What is he doing? What is he doing? You know, why is he going in?" So, whatever, I'll take the win. But yeah, doubly lucky there. I hope I didn't use up all of my run good on that one game by getting lucky twice to cover that one game. But we'll see this week how much is left.
Let's run through on a fairly short timing, Dave, because I got to get to Jeff Franklin today as well. And I've really not looked at the spreads much, so give us the feel.
All right, well, I'll go right to Pirates. Tonight I've got to play. I'm playing San Francisco -3. The Niners were -3 last week against the Bears. That was one of our picks, and we had a easy win there. We laid 3.5 against a much worse team. Obviously, the market's now, caught up a little bit to San Francisco. I mean, they went 300 yards to 4 yards in the first half. That was with McCaffrey in the game before getting, the spread was 3.5 before with McCaffrey in the game. He's not in this week. I don't think they need him. I don't think we should be too concerned about injuries here. I think that San Francisco is definitely, more than 3 points better than the Rams at home. So I'm playing the Niners tonight. I've got the Bucs +3. Tampa Bay is playing on the road against the Chargers. The Bucs offense is just incredible. I think they just continue to put up massive numbers. I also think that Herbert hurt his hip last week, and so he's in the game. He's not injured. And it's like our power ratings, they use the quarterback. If the quarterback's in, they're going to use the quarterback as if he's healthy. We're going to adjust the power ratings based on an injury that doesn't actually take the quarterback out of the game. So I think Herbert's a little bit worse here. He's not going to be able to scramble as well. Bucks have a great pass rush. I think it's going to really frustrate them. I like the Bucks getting 3 points here on the road. The Chargers. Playing the Chiefs -4. This is, I think, a gift. This is probably the best bet of the week. This game was -6.5. It's been, the Cleveland has cost so much money, it's been bet all the way to -4. Cleveland are just not that good. I guess the idea here is that the Chiefs have been winning a lot of games, but they haven't covered a game in their last seven or eight, they've failed to cover the spread, even though they've won all those games. So I get that the idea here is that the Chiefs are squeaking out close wins and have a hard time covering. But this is -4 in a game that we're looking at as -6. Now, I just think that's too many points to get this team. I think that the Browns are a very high variance team. And I just think that this is a gift. Even though the Chiefs are on the road, I will lay the four on the road.
Nice.
I'm playing Miami here. This is an interesting matchup that we had this week with the Texans and the Dolphins. I think these teams are both rated around average in their power ratings. The Dolphins are a bit better. I think the Dolphins are probably they're trending upwards in their power rating week to week. They've been going up every week. I think ever since Tua has been back, the offense has just gotten better and better. The Texans, meanwhile, are trending down. Their play calling's atrocious. They're going run pass pretty much every possession. They're around 30% on third down conversions. I mean, they're just putting themselves in the play calling is putting this team in impossible situations. So, you know, I think Miami getting 2.5 here, given that they're the better team going into the game, I don't think home field advantage is worth enough for them to overcome this. I like Miami plus 2.5. And then I've got two more plays. I like Denver minus 3.5. This is the one play that I'm probably a little bit nervous about. I think I might be on the wrong side of where the market is trending. There's been a ton of money that has come in on Indianapolis. This is the battle of the horse teams here. So this is probably the relevant game for us on this show. The Colts have a really impressive defense, which is probably why all the money's coming on them. This might be a tough spot. I did get 3.5. It was 5.5. It may still be moving, though. It may still be moving in Indianapolis direction. It does seem like this is a buyback point at 3.5, and this may be where it settles in. So I think I like the number that I got, but I feel nervous about this one because I think this is there's just so much money coming in on the Colts that I'm a little bit stressed about this game, but I am on the Broncos minus 3.5. And then finally, on Monday Night Football, I'm laying the 7 with the Vikings. You know, we bet the Vikings last week and covered easily in a beatdown game against Atlanta. And now they got to lay an even bigger number against Chicago. The money has been coming into Chicago, though sharp money is coming into Chicago. A lot of sharp players are trying to play some angles here, thinking that the Bears might cover this big number, that the Vikings aren't going to be able to win by margin here. I think they can do it. I think that... the second half of last week's game, they just lit the Falcons up. And I mean, this is an offense that's on fire. Chicago's a dead team. I feel like they look like they've quit. And I think that playing on prime time on Monday Night Football at home, I just think the Vikings will have all the incentive to just, run up the score. So the power ratings could not be more different on these two teams. I think the Vikings have what it takes to win by margin. But, as I often say, it's not for the faint of heart to lay these kinds of numbers. But we did lay 13 with Philly last week, so if we could stomach that bet, we can handle this one.
I love it. Wow, and look, I mean, the Eagles are a touchdown away from covering that number, actually, had some things connected a little more successfully. Let me quickly ask you, speaking of that game, Carolina minus 2.5 with Dallas coming in. I mean, you want to talk about a dead number. Cowboys are a mess, and I got to think that this has been a tough week, Big D. And Carolina is—they're fighting, and I thought they were. I saw that most of that game. I thought they were very good, and this Bryce Young is on the upswing. So I'm quickly curious: Carolina, Dallas, and then of course the two marquee games: Buffalo at Detroit and Pittsburgh at the Eagles. Any thoughts quickly?
Yeah, my thoughts are that the number in the Carolina game is just right. I think Carolina wins this game by a field goal. So I didn't want to bet it because I don't see a lot of value in the number being at 3. It is really interesting that the Panthers are laying, you can get 2.5 now in a lot of places, in a lot of shops. So it's a juice 2.5, though. You're going to pay a lot of juice to lay 2.5. I still wouldn't play it at 2.5. I just think it's a stay away game for me. The Cowboys are dealing, in addition to all of the bad luck they're dealing with, they also have injuries that are really hurting them on defense. So it's wild to see the Panthers favored at home this late in the season. But that's the National Football League. And then the other, what's the game? Oh, the big game is going to be Buffalo Detroit.
Right.
And I think what is Detroit laying this morning? It was 2.5.
Yep.
Okay, so still 2.5. I mean, there are some sharp players out there that are on Buffalo here, and that money has been coming in. I can see offshore the number's already at 2. Although if you take and it's 2 and it's still you the offshore money is coming in on Buffalo, so there's some interest in that team there. I don't know. I don't have a play here either. I think that where did I make them the game? I made the game. Detroit wins by 3.
Right.
So I didn't like the number, but it looks like it's a 1.5 in some places offshore already. I mean, it's crazy. The money is coming in on Buffalo offshore. Domestically, there's still a lot of money on Detroit. So that's a little pros versus Joes for you there. But it looks like offshore the big money is coming in on Buffalo.
Very good. Eagles, Steelers, Steagles.
Yeah, the Pennsylvania Bowl. I think the Eagles win this game by a touchdown. So we're getting 5.5. It's close to a play for me. At 5, I might play it. It looks like the market's moving to 5 offshore and at Circa. So I'll watch that number. I think that if that number moves to 5, I mean, it's at 5 right now, -110 at Circa. I mean, yeah, I'm going to keep my eye on that because I think that at 5, I'm going to play Philadelphia here if the number keeps going that way. I hate to be trying to go against where the, being against the directional move this late in the week. That's a little bit scary because even though my number says that that's a play, the market is showing me that it's not. But that also might be that that's the buyback point, and I may bet them in time that there's a lot of buyback there at 5. So I'll be watching that one. But if you guys really want to bet the Eagles, I think 5 and under is a good number here because I think they win by a touchdown.
Send me the grid and I'll get it out because there is another Thursday push from Dave Hill, week 15. Dave, thanks.
All right, good luck, guys.
Dave Hill, folks. Dave Hill, 77. And let's quickly turn around and get Jeff in here, Jeff Franklin. I gave you a bonus race. From right here at Remington Park. So let's get, and I do want Jeff, I do want Jeff to say something about Eddie Truman. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Sad morning, but good morning to you and to everybody.
Your appreciation for Eddie.
Boy, a friend of mine for decades, literally at the top of the class, as far as just being a human being and being authentic and being a damn good horseman. He's one of those guys that preferred to have, 20 head in the barn so he could give them all attention and didn't really like the hustle of going into super trainer status. But a top horseman and like me, Eddie, you find Eddie up in the mountains behind our homes, on his bike doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And it's like, geez, Truman, you're 15 miles from civilization. What are you doing up here? He's like, Franklin, what are you doing up here? Of course, I'd hike and he'd be on the bike, but anyway. And I just ran into him at dinner not too long ago. So I'm really sad, Steve.
I didn't realize it was as much of a surprise as it is. Well, I appreciate it. And I'm sure Hammer tomorrow will also join in and years of dealing with him in the racing office as well. I threw in a bonus race because I'm here at Remington for the Springboard Mile. And it's interesting. There's a couple of outsiders that if they could jump forward, they could impact it at a decent price. But the horse to beat is Moquette. Speed King having run the 8 in that debut.
Yeah, we agree. And I heard your analysis, just 20 minutes ago. And I think you guys covered all the pertinent points. The interesting thing to me was, you discussed how Stewart's going to the strange one of Steve's entries in the sense that it's a new shooter for him, etc. But, Complex Music, ordinarily, I would fade this horse because he just made such a gigantic move in his last start. But what's so interesting to me is that of all the horses in the race, this is the one that would seem to want the stretch outs, would seem to want 2 turns. And again, referring to the TGIs, some of the dam progeny, etc., would figure to be a slam dunk going 2 turns. I wonder if that didn't weigh in on Steve's thinking to enter the horse.
Could be. He's done a lot of developing, but he's this is his 7th career start. So he's there's one other horse, the Danny Kish, that Brooklyn Alley Cat, that's also making a 7th. But There's some dominant spirit is 15 to 1. Is a pair of 12s. A forward move from the Mohamed gelding could impact it.
Well, exactly. And that would, I mean, 15 to 1 is a silly price for a lightly raced horse that evidently has talent and, again, would figure the stretch out would benefit. So that's, you know, probably my second one. I mean, Speed King's, you know, enticing. I mean, ran a great numbers first time. Would figure to stretch out well. Moquette's really good. So what's there to overlook him? In fact, I know you guys were talking about Mr. Omaha. I was disappointed in the price. I mean, I realize he's a local favorite and everything, but from a thoroughbred perspective, I expect him to run really well tomorrow night. But I was hoping for, you know, 8 to 10 to throw him in for tries and such. 5 to 1, and if they bet him, is less attractive.
Let's jump. I want to absolutely get the Philly race in, the Gulfstream Tropical Park Oaks, because this is crazy. I'm very anxious to hear what you're doing in here.
Crazy is the perfect word. You're on a roll, Steve. I mean, there are, let's say, 6 horses within a couple of thoroughbred numbers here. They're all developing, and somebody will jump and run a 5 3/4 or something like that and win the race. I mean, obviously, I think a legitimate favorite, and I don't have morning lines here, would be In Our Time. Just ran the fastest number in the race, won over the turf course, won by daylight. Safi's, you know, hit on all cylinders. What's there not to like? Possibly the controlling speed, probably the controlling speed of the race. So there's a lot to go with her. Two horses, though, that I'm very, very interested in. One is See You Around. Now, for people that are looking at Thoroughgraph, you'll see next to the last number, there was an X. That means that Jerry and his analysts said that was a dead rail. And it was almost like this filly was running in quicksand while the other ones were running right by the tide line. And these are often some of our best opportunities because you get that bad-looking race that's fully explainable. So I'd love to see the price on her. Sadly, IRAD's on her. I love paying the price on him. But and she had really good numbers in Europe, second U.S. start for Clement. And then Sisterson's filly in a great pattern to emerge to, again, a brand-new top on Saturday. So those are the three that I see are the most attractive in the race, and I realize I'm overlooking 3 or 4 others that could be right there.
Well, and that's what made this race so much fun. And I obviously I picked the race without seeing the fix. I'll tell you the horse that intrigues me, and it is 48 hours out. I don't know why there's not a line here already.
Right.
And we did talk about Life's an Audible with Todd Tuesday at Arizona. But Random Harvest is a late starting 3-year-old of Jimmy Toner's. And she's an Uncle Mo out of a Galileo mare. She broke her maiden at Kentucky Downs. Then she stretched out to 1 3/16 at Keeneland successfully. I think Random Harvest is going to be 6-8 to 1, maybe even a little bit, maybe even 10 to 1. And Random Harvest to me is the one that's got upside.
Well, great pattern, undefeated, and we don't have a top for her yet. All she's done is give us 2 numbers, points in time. Why not? And again, that's why the race is crazy and will be so much fun to watch. You know, we'll have an opportunity to see how the public gives us value or does not, and how the fillies approach their work on the racetrack, etc. So,
wow. Jack Sisterson too with Viv. She broke her maiden at Gulfstream,
right,
and came right back and won the Sanibel, and now she comes back. She hasn't won, actually, since last winter, earlier this year in March. So she's going to be a decent, I don't know, what do you think, 6 to 1, 5 to 1?
Yeah, maybe. Because, I mean, all she does is, you know, she hits the board every time.
Yeah, she's consistent.
Yeah, and she's in a great pattern. So I expect her, as I said earlier, I expect her to run a big one as well. What a beautiful race to watch and try to pick some value.
You got
slide a trifecta in there.
10 seconds, Louisiana Sprint. Who's our horse? Who's the winner? Quick.
Go Sugar.
Yeah. Yep. That's it. All right. Done.
Yeah. Steve, thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. There, you bet. There it is. When using Theragraph, Jeff Franklin, crafty as ever. Thanks to Jeff and to Dave Hill. The Dale Day. Johnny D. And a nice tour of Ireland with John Parada to start us off hour one. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. And safe trip for our Scherzando in the nightcap at the Big A with Rivera. You probably heard me say this a few times. Maybe today's the day. He always tries. Back to the dirt for him, and be nice. He deserves it. He's a hard trier. He's been good for a long time for us. Thanks, everybody. Back here for Twin Spires Weekend Preview at the Races from Remington Park. Springboard Mile Night tomorrow. All your favorites, and we'll handicap the weekend. Talk to you tomorrow.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.